Hey, Open Mic Podcast listeners. Want to share your opinions, give me feedback, or tell me what you're thinking? If you do, send me a voice message. Voice messages are an easy way for you to send me audio that might end up in future episodes of the podcast. They're the latest feature from Anchor, the platform that I use to make this show. Here are some things that I would love to hear from you. What questions do you have for me? What did you think of the episode? What did you think of the topic? Who should I interview next? Make up a theme song. I don't know. Do your best impression of me. I'll see all of your messages and I might add them into a future episode. Anchor makes that part super easy. You can send me a voice message right now from wherever you're at, wherever you're listening. Just tap the link in my show notes and I can't wait to hear from you. Again, thanks for listening to the Open Mic Podcast. Until next time, cheers and be well and enjoy today's episode.
It's time for the Open Mic Podcast with your host, Brett Allen. Broadcasting live from the Bay Area studios, here at the Open Mic, no topic is off limits. And of course, you never know who may stop by. So sit back, relax, and enjoy today's show.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome into episode 133 of the Open Mic Podcast. It's good to be here. I think it's episode 133. I don't know. That's really terrible that I don't even know what episode we're on. I'm pretty sure it's 133. A little late in getting today's episode out. I apologize. I have been a bit under the weather recently, and I was dealing with a horrible stomach bug just a couple days ago. And so I'm feeling better now, super excited. The mic is hot, and we are ready to get the show cranking today. I have a special guest. Liam Martin is joining me today. I'm very stoked to have him on the show. He is an entrepreneur. He is a smart guy, and he is the founder of Time Doctor, which helps companies who have employees that work remote maximize their productivity, maximize when they work, when they clock in, when they clock out, all of that sort of thing. So it's going to be a fun conversation for sure. And happy Wednesday to everybody. Happy hump day. We're almost over the week. It's Wednesday. Before you know it, it'll be Friday. It's raining pretty heavily here in the Bay Area. We've just had a lot of rain recently, and it just keeps pouring. You can probably possibly hear it in the background as we're talking here. But anyway, thanks to everyone who joins in every day, every week, for being a part of the podcast. It just means the absolute world that you want to be a part of it and that you want to listen every single day. All of the fantastic ratings and reviews that you provide us, it's super awesome. And so enough of me chitter-chattering. Let's get to our guest today. Again, his name is Liam Martin of Time Doctor. Liam, welcome to the podcast, my friend. It's good to have you here today.
Thanks for having me.
I'm very excited to talk to you. I love talking to entrepreneurs, business owners, everybody in that lane. So I'm very excited. But just to give the audience an idea of where you're actually located today and how this works, where are you at now physically?
Today, I'm in Playa del Carmen, Mexico. And okay. I'm actually staying at the Selena Co-Live Co-Work environment. So
okay.
For those that don't know, Selena is a relatively new startup. They're probably about 4 or 5 years old.
Okay.
Raised $250 million to build a network of co-living spaces for remote workers throughout Central and South America. And now they're expanding out into Southeast Asia
okay.
as well. So it allows people like me that work from a laptop to be able to operate in a bunch of locations that would have otherwise been very difficult for me to operate out of and are very nice. There's a beach that I'm looking at right now out my window.
Oh, wow.
So it's a very nice, enjoyable place. And we've got, I've got 20 down, 20 up right now on my connection. So that's pretty fantastic to be out in kind of the middle of nowhere. I think it's 200,000 people in this town and have such high quality internet and the beach right in front of me.
Yeah, two great things. So let's keep trucking along here, especially the beach view. I bet I'm very jealous right now. I don't have such a great view, but that's totally okay. So let's talk about your background. You do business software development. You help businesses track employees, all of that, just a whole bunch of things. How did you get started in that particular line of business?
Sure. Well, so that actually started in grad school. I was my degrees are in sociology, and I remember I took a class. I was not the teaching assistant. I was the professor for that class. And it was really kind of a big moment for me because this is what I wanted to do with my career. And long story short, I think I started with about 300 students and ended up with less than half by the end of the year. And for anyone that knows, it's really not good. I think I got like a 3 out of 5 on my on my student professor reviews. So I remember going into my supervisor's office and saying, I don't think I'm very good at this. And he said, no, you're not. and then I said, okay, so what do you think I should do? He's like, well, you really need to get better at this teaching thing if you want to pursue academia. So either get better at that or figure something else out. And 2 months later, I threw a master's thesis under his door. I got a minus in it, and I was out into the real world. And that actually translated into an online tutoring business.
Okay.
Which actually grew very quickly and successfully, and I was very happy with it. And what we were doing is tutoring people through Skype. This was 12, 13 years ago when kind of the whole concept was very, very new. But one of the problems that we ran into, or I ran into, is I would bill out a student for 10 hours. And then the student would come to me and say, well, I only worked with my tutor for 5 hours, not for 10 hours. And then I'd go to the tutor and say, hey, did you work with Jimmy for 10 hours? And this tutor would say, of course I did. So what I'd end up having to do is refund the student for the 5 hours, pay the tutor for the whole 10 hours, and I'd be losing money on the deal. Mm-hmm. That was what was destroying, or was not allowing that business to really scale up. So Time Doctor, which is our first SaaS business, is basically a way to be able to measure exactly how long someone worked for you if they're working remotely. So we don't just measure the amount of time that someone's working, but we measure and confirm those work hours through a whole bunch of other variables that we measure while someone is working. And then that allows you to very clearly see, okay, is this remote employee actually doing what they're supposed to be doing? And how many hours are they actually working for you? So that business has been up and running for approximately 8 years. We also built another business in combination with that, which is staff.com, which is an enterprise version of our software. And that's mostly connected to artificial intelligence and machine learning. So as an example, that software can tell you whether an employee is going to quit with an 89% accuracy rate 6 months before they actually quit. We like to tell people that, and this is true, we generally can tell you if someone's going to quit before they even know they're going to quit. So that's the enterprise side of the product. And then the thing that we've recently started in the last year and a half is Running Remote, which is our conference on building and scaling remote teams that we do out in Bali. And that's been kind of a passion project for me, because our mission statement as a company is we want to empower people to work wherever they want, whenever they want. So that connects to software to get the developing world access to the global labor pool through Time Doctor. This also applies to building a conference on really kind of understanding the playbook of how to build and scale remote teams, because I fundamentally, that means you'll have happier workers and you'll have workers that are a lot more cost effective than what I like to call the on-premise model.
So that brings me to my next question, the on-premise model. Do you think that businesses like that are going to start going away more and more people are going to start working remote like yourself? And if so, why?
Within 20 years, I think more than 50% of people will work completely remotely.
Why do you think that? And I'm not coming at you at a sideways angle. I'm just very curious, because for people like myself who have a day job, so to speak, and work in an office building and that sort of thing, do you think, I guess I'm curious as to the why, because I find that so intriguing.
Do you like working in an office building?
I don't. So...
You just answered your own thing right there. So like, we can go through the stats, but basically last year, 2017, about 53% of workers in the United States worked remotely to some degree. So like they worked on Fridays remotely, as an example, and only 2% of those people worked full time remote. This year, it's 3.8% full time remote. So what I see happening right now is an interesting phenomenon where Fortune 1000 companies are kind of testing the waters and seeing, because they're very scared, right? Like, I'm just going to have this guy and he's going to go work at home and, you know, he's not going to be, he's going to be watching Netflix and, you know, playing video games all day long and not actually doing his work. And so that's where we actually come in as a bridge to be able to say, well, you're a little apprehensive about this. You would not have a remote work agreement except if you could solve that problem. So we're the ones that come in to try to solve that problem. So we're kind of like a Trojan horse in that sense, where we say, we're giving you all these great analytics. And by the way, now your employees can work remotely. But like when you just break it down to the dollars and cents, employees working remotely is the single best way to make your employees happier in their job. Out of any other thing, you know, you give them free lunch, it doesn't even compare to being able to work remotely. And then secondarily, you can't ignore the cost savings. I would say the same employee, same salary, realistically, you're getting between 20 and 25% savings in comparison to an on-premise employee.
Interesting.
So for that reason, I think it's definitely something that's going to, I mean, I'm a little biased because all my chips are in on.
Oh, yeah, I would say so.
Right? So you'd probably want to be able to get someone else in that's as equally passionate about the other side. But fundamentally to me, I think when you look at the amount of companies, just even in the tech sector, that are completely remote, that are very successful, we've had three unicorns this year that are remote. And the ratio of remote companies that are turning into unicorns are way higher than just the general population of tech companies, as an example. And I'm using tech as a very small...
Sure. Well, that's what mostly is remote these days, right?
Absolutely. Well, it's also because generally these guys are, they understand how to use computers, they understand how to use this type of technology, so they're a lot more adaptable to it. So they'll always be the ones that are kind of at the cusp of this type of an industry. But fundamentally, once, you know, 3M figures out that, whoa, you mean we can cut 20% of our costs, get more productivity, and our employees will be happier? Sounds good to me. Like, sign me up. They just
it's a win-win deal.
Yeah.
So ideally, the software and the programs that you have developed are really to help make that transition happen. So businesses can easily transition to having their employees work from home.
Yeah.
Is that our, kind of the idea?
Our mission statement as a company is that we want to empower people to work wherever they want, whenever they want. So if you are, if there is a product, if there is a service, if there is a conference that helps facilitate that, then our mission statement is to be able to help that person and or build that piece of software or conference to be able to facilitate that type of activity.
Wonderful. You've developed all of these tools. So the next question logically, I think, would be how can you monitor employees if they're actually working or not?
So number one, that's a really complicated question. We ask our clients all the time, what does productivity mean to you? Actually, that's probably a good question. What does productivity mean to you?
Oh, so now we're flipping the tables.
Yeah.
Well, I think, so I'm a wine broker by trade. That's what I do.
Okay.
And so I sit at a desk and I call people all day long and I broker deals for wine, for businesses, for individuals, for wineries, that sort of thing. And so my productivity is I have to make an X number of dials per day, talk to a number amount of people, and sell a certain dollar amount of wine. Mm-hmm. They have all these proprietary systems in place where they can tell you the length of a conversation that I had out of the number of dials I had. And then they do some equation and it bases itself out to dollars per dial.
Right.
So that's how it works for me. So we do have employees that work remotely, but they can monitor them on several different ways as far as like activity. But I guess, you know, if it's not so cut and dry for them like it is for me, the question I would have is, well, which I think this is all awesome.
Yeah.
How would they be able to really figure that out, so to speak?
So this is the interesting phenomenon. Dollars per dials is actually a pretty good metric.
Okay.
You probably are more advanced in your mindset. You're using CRMs and a bunch of other pieces of software to be able to facilitate this.
Absolutely.
we'll have people that will come to us and say, well, it's how much money they make as a salesperson. Okay, that's a good metric. And then another person would say, well, it's the amount of dials that they do per day. Probably a pretty bad metric, actually, because if that's the metric that I want to maximize, I'm just going to dial all day long.
Oh, yeah.
And then just totally. Give you that result, right? That's that's someone else's interpretation of productivity. However, for us, we don't bias ourselves towards what that definition of productivity is. So one company may be completely different from another. Just as an example, we had an outbound sales reps company that had like 20,000 reps, and they had bronze, silver, gold, and platinums. And they had these different levels. And you had to achieve a certain amount of sales in a certain context per month to become a platinum. And platinums they didn't have to come into the office. They didn't even have to use the CRM. They didn't measure anything. The only output variable that they measured was how many sales they did per month. So it's kind of like as you moved up the levels, you basically had less metrics to measure you by, which I actually think is a bad idea. What we did.
Yeah, that's not smart, I don't think.
Yeah, what we did as a company is we came in and analyzed those platinums. And then we told them what a platinum looks like in the first month of engaging a new employee. So we can very quickly understand through a lot of machine learning and artificial intelligence, what does a platinum look like? That's, you know, starting on month one, are they going to turn into a platinum on month six? And that's an example of a metric that they really wanted us to track, to really measure onboarding productivity. So to kind of just communicate all the different definitions, there's like so many different definitions. So we try to stay away from the terminology of productivity. And instead, we just focus on collecting different metrics. As an example, I do a lot of podcasts. One of the metrics that I have between me and Vaishali is the one that helps me facilitate all of these podcasts with me, is how many podcasts we generate per month. And then the domain authority associated with all those podcasts and a bunch of other variables. And we kind of come up with like a very singular number, which is, I think we call it cumulative domain authority that applies to all of these podcasts. And then we can see whether we're moving in an upward or a downward direction. But
it's interesting that you say that, because she found me out of nowhere, literally. Like, I was completely shocked when I got her email pitching you as a guest, which I'm so glad she did. I was like, I asked her, I said, how did you find me? Because I'm very curious, because I get three or four pitches a week, and I'm very fortunate that my show has has gotten such a big reach, and it's hard work to do this, but I love it. But she's like, oh, I heard you on this show, and then I saw you interviewed Evan Carmichael and Dan Martell. So I saw that you had a similar experience with them. That's why I think Liam would be excellent for your show. I was like, perfect, let's do it.
If you want to break that down, what we in essence did is we built customer avatars for the Running Remote conference. So inside of that customer avatar, we had who are people that our customer listens to. So Dan Martell was actually my my executive coach for what we do in our company. That was one of those avatars. So all we did is we analyzed, okay, who are the people that are working with them? And then literally what Vaishali will do is spend half an hour looking at that podcast, seeing whether or not this is something that I would be the right fit on, and then building a very specific pitch to that particular individual. And I would probably say our hit rate has been extra. I mean, I've done 200 podcasts in the last 6 months, approximately. So it's a very methodological machine. But once you get it pumping and you know the outcome variables of how much, I can tell you down to the dollar how much each podcast is costing our company to make. And not as running our own podcast, which we do, but like literally me interviewing people, because I have Vaishali's time, I have my time, I'm looking at what's happening beforehand. This entire task, I had interview with the Open Mic podcast as my task through my Time Doctor. And then Vaishali has a bunch of other variables that connects to that. And then we all connect it together as a project to be able to see how much time are we putting in, and then what are the returns off of that vein of traffic.
Wow.
We're very quantitative in the way that we analyze things. We're probably a little too quantitative fundamentally, but that's also who we are as a company. So it's something that it's been very, just kind of going back to productivity. There are many definitions, and you need to kind of be agnostic towards those definitions if you really want to be successful on our side, as an example.
Absolutely. So one last question on this topic, and then I want to move to some topics of being an entrepreneur. What have businesses' responses been to you pitching them this program and this software to help them become better?
We have two responses. So there's one of two categories that people are in. I want to take my company remote, but I'm not willing to do it at this point without deploying a software like Time Doctor. That's category one. And then category two is usually people that are remote or in office on premise, and they've had some type of lack of trust inside of their organization. And that's usually when they trigger our type of software. As an example, we had a guy out of Manhattan, I can remember a few months ago, and he was he had a family emergency on a Friday at noon. He left to go deal with that emergency, came back at 3 p.m. and everyone was gone out of the office. Wow. So he was like, the moment I leave, everyone just disappears, right? They're like cockroaches. So then he was on the phone with us saying, well, how am I, like, I don't want to just give people the stick constantly. I want people to actually be measured by what they're doing, not necessarily how long they're in the office, which is actually, that's another definition of productivity that people have, which I love. How many hours you're in the office? The average worker spends about 2 hours and 36 minutes typing on their computer per day. The rest of that time is kind of spent just screwing around. Lunches, that kind of stuff. Like, I'm sure for you, you could probably, on a focused smile and dial, lock down for an hour and build out your new leads and get your 2 to 3 meetings in 1 hour. Easily.
Oh, totally.
Right.
Yeah, if I'm not focused.
Right. And it's like, that's the thing, that why don't we, instead of having 8 hours, why don't we all just work in a super focused way for 4 hours and all go home? We'll get the same exact amount of productivity out. And this is something that also is problematic when we talk to large companies, is we'll analyze their data and we'll say, it looks like you need to fire these 28 managers and you need to reduce your work hours by 3 hours per day. And it seems like that's going to probably increase your overall productivity by 50%. And that's something that a lot of companies are still not willing to really accept. But from a data perspective, the data is very clear. There's a lot of old school industrial revolutionary thinking towards working that no one has really tested those assumptions, because no one has had the data set to actually do it. And we do have the data set, and then we provide them responses, answers to questions that maybe they don't necessarily feel comfortable with.
Fantastic. I love it. It's awesome. And I think what you've developed is great. And it seems like it's really going to change the forefront of how businesses run in the future. Because if they can adopt this software successfully and really make it work, they're going to save money in other places too, like running businesses, as far as keeping buildings open and electricity and free lunches, like you suggested, and that sort of thing. And really probably just drilling out the most productivity out of an employee possible, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that that's really, when you boil down to the end of the day, what's the productivity per employee? And that's the only variable that any company should be concerned about. And any way you can get to that is, and sometimes that might be, well, cut their, pay them the same amount of money and have them work half the hours.
Mm-hmm.
that probably, maybe that improves their productivity or at least keeps them at the same level. It's true. You know, there's a lot of data sets that I can show you that prove that point, but it's a slow kind of game to be able to change people's mindsets.
Absolutely. No doubt about that. So as an entrepreneur, you have found a problem and you have solved it essentially. What is Liam's definition of being an entrepreneur?
I think I've got kind of a pie in the sky version, which is the ability to do whatever you want, whenever you want, with whoever you want, for as long as you want. That's probably my definition of entrepreneurship, the ability to work very, very hard at the beginning of your life so that you can do whatever you want in the second half of your life. And that's kind of the input-output variable that I see connected to entrepreneurship. Freedom, definitely. And then more importantly than that, I feel that, and this is really kind of sunk in over the last couple of years, is doing something that truly makes a difference in the world is something that, and this is kind of maybe connected to like social entrepreneurship, which is not everybody. And I absolutely respect if your goal is to just make tons of money. I absolutely respect that. But to me, the excitement is having someone go from a dollar a day to going to $10 a day in the developing world. That's something that just really gets me excited and makes me very passionate about pursuing what I'm doing. And like, I have a friend of mine that I've developed a relationship with, Kazi, who used our software out of Bangladesh about 10 years ago. And he went from literally working in a stall, no formal education, working in the back of a stall in Bangladesh. And now he's a UI UX designer and he's making $3,000 a month. Those are the types of people. If I could get 100 million of those people, that would be very exciting to me. And you wouldn't need to pay me because it's just a very exciting, but that's something that just really drives me.
Wow. I love the answer. So when it comes to mentorship and people finding a mentor or perhaps reaching out to you to be their mentor, what are some of your best practices that you could recommend to somebody looking for something like that?
I would say mentorship for me has been really important. I would not have succeeded had it not been for having those types of people around me. And I choose three mentors usually are in my like close Rolodex. I have the long ball inspirational mentor. And that person can be someone you literally just follow on social media, or it could be someone that you know personally. One of those mentors for me is Toby Lutke, who runs Shopify. And his main office is actually right across from our office back in Canada. And he's been a fantastic mentor of not just me, but a lot of other Canadian entrepreneurs, tech entrepreneurs, and seeing his growth from a very small company into a $6-8 billion company has been very inspirational for me. But I'm not on that trajectory and he's way far ahead. So I can see that inspiration. And by interacting with him, you understand that it is possible. If you surround yourself with 10 billionaires, the chance of you becoming a billionaire is probably pretty high because you can see what they're doing and you can see that it's possible. The second category of mentor that I usually have is someone that's about 2 to 3 years ahead of me.
Okay.
Those are the people that can really tell you the tactics of what's happening. So I have a couple of those. I'll give you a buddy of mine. He's currently built a tool called Fellow.co, which is a tool to be able to manage employees better. Just it's a management tool to be able to kind of figure out HR issues and all that kind of stuff. And he's always been 2 to 3 years ahead of me. So he can tell me, and he just sold his company about 3 years ago. So he can tell me, here's how an acquisition process goes. Here's how to manage 100 people. We've got 100 people in the company right now. I think he sold at about 150 people. So he's like, he still remembers all of those details, whereas Toby is not thinking about that because he has 80,000 people or whatever. Like, he's got a huge, massive company, and he really can't think that far back because that was 7-8 years ago for him. But someone who's 2 to 3 years ahead of you can really give you a lot more tactical information. And then the third one would be get yourself a coach. I think that that's another really great one. And you mentioned Dan. We've been working with him for 2 years, and he's a coach specifically for SaaS, which is great because we actually had coaches before that weren't specifically SaaS, and we ended up going with Dan because he understands our lingo, he understands how to talk to us in the right way, and we can just get past a lot of the details a lot quicker and get down to brass tacks. And that's the person who should be formally keeping you accountable. So you can either pay that person, or someone may coach you for free. It really depends on the situation, the relationship that you developed with that person. But to me, those are the three categories of mentors that I usually grab onto.
Fantastic. And Dan was great. I enjoyed talking to him. Super nice guy. Mm-hmm. One last question. If someone is on the cusp of entrepreneurship and they're just like a little bit afraid to take the risk, they don't know what to expect, just a million different things, what advice would you have for them?
Number one, you should be afraid. Generally, you're probably going to lose more than you win. And I'm just telling you the reality. Like, I would love to be this super positive guy that's sitting on a yacht or has like a Ferrari or something like that, and is like, listen, I'm going to tell you the secrets to become a millionaire. That doesn't happen. And anyone who tells you that stuff is bullshitting you, and you need to be very protective towards that, because they usually take advantage of people who are very early on in the process. And you need to be very mindful of who those people are and try to direct yourself away from them. So I would say you need to start small. I would say you're probably going to fail at your first one, so don't put all your money into it. Start small. Try something. You're going to learn. You're going to learn the process. You're probably going to fail at it. And then from that business, you're going to build another one, and that one at least has a higher chance of success. My girlfriend and partner of the last 6 years, she started a company to be able to help octogenarians in Canada, and she was doing okay at it. She maybe made like, 50, 60 grand in her first 6 months. And then she ended up started another business, which was a mermaid tail business. And that business does fantastically well. She's got 20 plus locations throughout North America and the Middle East. And she's got about 100 employees, and everything's going super well. But she wouldn't have succeeded at that business had she not learned the lessons of that first business. And she didn't bet the farm on the first business either.
Love it. So for those listening who want to maybe contact you for their business or just to learn more about you, how can they do that?
If you want to learn about Time Doctor, go to timedoctor.com. You can get a free trial there. If you're interested in remote teams, runningremote.com is a great spot. And if you want to contact me, I think one of the best places that I've found so far, which is really underutilized, is YouTube. Mm-hmm. So go to youtube.com/runningremote, and we've got all of our talks there as well. If you're looking for that digital mentor, all of those talks are available from the conferences that we've done, and we've just given them for free to everybody. So, but if you write a comment down there, I'll get back to you in under 24 hours. That's the best place to get me.
There you have it, folks. Fantastic, Liam. Thank you so much for being on the Open Mic podcast today. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Another great episode in the can. Thanks to Liam Martin for joining in today. Again, all of his information will be available in the show notes, as I mentioned earlier. Want to make sure that you know that. Thanks, everybody, for being a part of today's episode. Have a fantastic week, and we'll see you on Friday. Cheers and be well.
That brings today's episode to a close. Thanks for listening in. If you enjoyed today's episode, head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a kind rating and review. It really does help. Until next time, cheers and be well.